CB Shocking Jazz.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet, I mean clap your heads. Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
Live from the CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to this edition of the Goat Rodeo, Racing Through History, whatever you choose to call it. We're here, and we're live tonight from our brand new, spanking new studio in New York City. Where is it, Jack? The corner of
35th and
the Americas?
And Avenue of the Americas, Avenue of course, the Americas. In the first building on the left.
First building on the left.
34th floor.
Way too high for me.
That's us right there, folks. If you don't believe us, check out the video. Brand new studio, just finished it. It's brand new. Anyway, how's everybody doing tonight?
Put us on there.
Doing good.
You guys got to talk while I do that. I got to have a free hand here or something. So
talk, Tim.
Tim, bring us in, buddy.
Yeah, well, welcome to the show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to have everybody here on a Tuesday night. In September, after we have weathered the storm in poor Florida, I haven't been able to hear from Alex. I've texted Alex a couple of times since Sunday, and I have not heard from him, but I have another friend of mine that lives in Tampa, and he and I have been communicating the whole time the storm was going on and everything else, so I don't think it was really bad enough to be that dangerous. It was just bad enough to be very, very, very inconvenient, I think.
Depends on how close to the sea you were.
Yeah, how close
to the sea level you were.
A lot of people without power, both in Georgia and Florida.
A lot.
Well, it was like that guy said on the news I was watching tonight, said he never had oceanfront property. He was six blocks off the ocean, and now he's got oceanfront property.
Oh, the Williamson Daily News. What's that
So what happened? It got silent, got quiet there for a minute.
Tim stopped talking.
And Bobby,
you told me to shut up and move along.
And Bobby's reading headlines somewhere.
On what? I would like to know.
On Richland. The Richland race.
Richland race.
That was a...
Richland.
At the old Strawberry Hill Speedway.
Seriously, there was a bar in Little River. This has been...
Wait a minute. Yeah, a bar? You don't know anything about bars.
How would you know, Bobby?
You're a Sunday school teacher. You don't know
well,
about
I
bars.
See these evil things as I'm riding down the road. It's evil, I tell you.
Evil.
It was and they were so evil, they didn't know how to spell and didn't know what the name of the race was. And they had one of these signs out front, you know, that you put the letters on and write stuff, a mark, and it had... Richland race, Richland.
Oh no!
I was probably the only one in Little River. Probably the only one that actually noticed that was spelled wrong.
Yeah. Little River's not exactly a racing mecca.
Not exactly an academic. icon.
Yeah, an academic stronghold.
I wasn't going to go there.
It's not exactly the Ivy League.
I wasn't going there, Bob.
Richland race. That was back in the heyday of NASCAR when people would, you know, they would have TVs and mess and trying to be a sports bar.
Yeah.
Richland. But I understood what they were.
You knew. You got the gist of it, right?
Trying to say. So anyway, we had the Richland race.
The Richland race this weekend. Yeah. How was it, Bobby?
Was it a goat rodeo? I got two words to say to you. Goat rodeo.
Goat rodeo.
It was the ultimate. It was the penultimate example of a goat rodeo. We've talked about this for years, and now we have seen
it has
one.
Come true.
And now you know why we named the show this. If you watch the Richland race, you understand the naming
understand
of the show.
The show name.
Well, you know, it's not all that bad because I heard yesterday that they've already sold 12,221 tickets to attorneys in the Richmond area.
To what?
Now, you need attorneys, to expand, lawyers. Expand that.
Yeah, please explain.
Ambulance chasers.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, get into it. Somebody take it away here. We need to.
Tim, did you watch the Richland race?
I watched the entire race and then watched everything all the way through. As a matter of fact, I actually sat there and watched the Xfinity race Friday night, which is something I don't normally do, but it turned out to be a pretty good one. Yeah, I watched the entire thing. I could not believe that ambulance phenomenon. I couldn't believe the Denny Hamlin stupidity of wrecking. And you heard him say, his teammate, so regardless of what Pastor Joe has to say, he owns six teams in NASCAR, and I thought there were a four-team rule. You couldn't hold but four teams, but he's done said it now five or six times, and NASCAR's doing nothing about it. So come on, Jack Roush, bring back 10 or 12 teams and build up the field of some. You're the one that started all that to begin with. So.
Well, the first Christmas thing to happen was not the ambulance, was Matt Kenseth was just going into the third turn. He was leading the race.
Could you see that?
He was leading the race. He went in the third turn, and for whatever reason, his left front tire, or one of the tires, locked up under braking. And, you know, smoked and so on and so forth. And NASCAR, I mean, instant, the quickest yellow flag in the history of NASCAR was unfurled. He locked up his brakes for a moment. There was some white smoke. They threw the flag in 1 second. And there was absolutely nothing. There was nothing wrong. They thought he was blowing up or something. They thought some kind of issue had happened with his car.
It's amazing to me how NASCAR can throw a yellow flag in an instant.
Who was in second?
For one incident.
At probably Kyle Busch at that time, Tim. Probably Kyle Busch or Kyle Larson. Those three was always up front the whole race.
Well, if Kyle Busch was the second, was running second, that might explain why they threw the caution flag, was to put them side by side so Kyle Busch could have a chance to jump him on the restart.
But that set the tone. This race was continuously, there was external factors that was at play or in play, whether accidentally or contrived or whatever, that without question affected the outcome of the race.
Well, Woody Delbridge just printed up on chat, NASCAR takes blame for ambulance incident. NASCAR takes the blame, they say.
Who else would blame could it be?
The
ambulance driver.
Well, who else in the world, who told the ambulance man to go out there in the beginning,
probably
in the original
NASCAR.
Beginning?
Probably them, because you better believe that NASCAR controls the firefighters.
Well, nothing moves unless NASCAR tells them.
Exactly.
They told the ambulance man to go out. That was a case where Danica halfway spun out, never came to a stop. It got going again. Everybody was under caution, and there was no car wrecked anywhere.
Oh, it's all for good, though. NASCAR caught a break when the incident didn't prevent Kenseth from securing a spot in the playoffs.
Well, that's like saying two negatives. Two negatives make a positive somehow.
Right.
Yeah, okay, well, it didn't hurt us none. Well, it was a dumb move, but it didn't, you know, no harm, no foul. It could have dramatically altered the playoffs.
Hell yeah.
But that wasn't the end. That was not the end of the drama.
Had Kenseth not won a race, it would have.
If somebody else had have won the race that had not won, let's say Clint Bowyer won that race, it would have knocked Kenseth out.
Yep.
With three laps remaining, Martin Truex is just crew. He had like a 3-second lead. It is a done deal.
I'm reading this article, in the Richmond Times, and Steve O'Donnell says, anytime there's an incident and a vehicle stops, we dispatch our chase vehicle, an ambulance, and usually a tow truck. In this case, all three of those are dispatched, and then if a vehicle ends up rolling off, there's communication between each of those individually. I think in this case, I want to say the safety truck was a little ahead of the field. Oh, gosh.
No, the term that who was the other NASCAR honcho that's been in the middle of this firestorm? Scott Miller or somebody like that.
Yeah, somebody that I never heard of.
He's been the answer man. And the term he likes to use is there was a directive.
A directive.
There was a directive for the ambulance man to go out there and a directive for him to stop, but he stopped at the wrong place.
Well, when he got to there and they hollered stop,
he did not heed
the
directive.
He just jumped on the brakes. What else could he do?
It was an incomplete directive. Let's give the ambulance driver the benefit of the doubt here. It was an incomplete directive.
We need to get the ambulance driver on the show.
We know there was a directive, okay? We're sure of that, okay? Steve Miller said there was a directive.
We just don't know all manner of directives.
There's lots of directives. The ambulance driver must have gotten confused. He says, "Which directive?"
Well, I'm sure the ambulance driver has had his parking encumbered.
Well,
among other things,
if you've ever been party to listening to NASCAR radio and heard the type chatter that goes on, it's a wonder they ever get safety vehicles out and back without a disaster. You've almost got to listen to the radio for a couple of years just to understand how to decipher what the tower is telling you and everybody else, and be able to determine whether or not it's you they're talking to or somebody else, because those ambulances, those safety vehicles don't have numbers on them. They don't know the names of the people that are driving them. So it's very hard to determine who David Hoots is talking to.
Are you saying we should number the ambulances?
Well,
they could race, pre-race.
Number 29 ambulance.
Ambulance 29.
That would straighten out the directive.
This is a directive. This is a directive, an official directive. Well, anyway, he wound up stopped in the middle of the speedway, and here comes the. Now, I'll tell you what, guys, I ain't ever driven in a Winston Cup car or whatever they are. But when you on a racetrack, the last thing you expecting to come up on is an ambulance.
Or a jet dryer.
Yeah, a jet dryer.
Or a jet dryer.
Hey, Jeff, you've raced. You ain't looking for that, are you?
No, no.
Or anything stopped.
I mean,
when pit road has a green light on.
When you come around the speedway, you're not looking for an ambulance.
And the thing that most people don't realize, when you're on a short track like that with a little bit of banking, you can't see around the track.
You can't see that far ahead of you.
Yeah.
And, of course, Matt Kenseth said that. He said I just couldn't see that far around.
It wasn't Kenseth's thought that it had been a chain reaction, and he was the last guy.
Yeah, he was the last link in the chain.
He ran into the back of Boyer, but he was just the wrong place at the wrong time. Everybody was trying to avoid the ambulance.
Yep. And at the same time, all the ones that were trying to avoid the ambulance were going to pit road, and there was a green light there. They were looking for the green light, and it's further around to the left and up high. So all of a sudden, you come around 10 more feet, and there's an ambulance stopped right in front of you.
So we beat the ambulance directive to death. What else happened?
Who won the race?
I was going to tell you that. I was going to tell you, there's three laps to go. It is lap whatever it was, 397 of the Richland race. And Derek Cope, bless his heart, was bumbling around out there at about half speed, just making laps, and somehow got her fast enough to scrape the third turn wall, the Derek Cope Racing Chevrolet. And NASCAR, with three laps to go, Derek Cope did not stop. He kept on going. They threw the caution in a heartbeat. It's three laps.
They wanted yellow fever. Yep. Is exactly what they had.
And that put the race into what? What is their favorite?
Overtime.
Overtime.
Yeah. Now, remember, this is the this is the critical last season. Everything hinges on this race. And now that now they've just put it back into the hand of their own hands, so they have a pit, so everybody comes in the pits, and Kyle Larson's crew gets him out first. He wins the race off of pit road, and of course the race they only got to go three laps, and he wins the race. But in the course of doing all of that, Denny Hamlin ran in the back of Truex
and wrecked him,
put him in the woods on the white flag lap or something. So. Where did Truex wind up, Tim? Like 11th or something?
Truex wound up in the interview booth,
mad as a
mad
dog.
As an old wet hen.
And right, was he
11th or 18th? Why do I think 18th?
Somehow I think 11th, but I don't know why I think that. I cannot verify that. Now, let us go back a week to Darlington. There's more Christmas involved. Let's go back a week to Darlington.
Got my feet up on the rungs of the stool, and I'm
Remember, Denny Hamlin is leading late at Darlington in the flying 11. She's illegal as a dog, but he's leading the race. And Truex knocks the wall down there. Tim, you was there.
I was there.
He knocked her down, and no yellow come out. Remember, everybody was so happy. Oh, they're going to let him race. Oh, that's great. Remember that?
Yeah, and Truex was coming around the inside with a flat tire at 30 miles an hour.
Dang on right, he knocked the ball around. And no flag. So,
which proves the fact that NASCAR will try to manipulate things. When they withhold it sometimes.
Oh, come on.
Yes.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yes.
Oh, give me a break, man.
I did.
You hush up and move along.
Don't be bringing that stuff up on this show.
Why not?
Can't possibly be true.
Can't happen, man.
Oh, yes, it can.
So, anyway, that was... So, Kyle Larson winds up winning the race. I mean, he stole it because of circumstances.
But what I don't get about that circumstance was, as hard as NASCAR has been on Kyle Larson lately, that they gave him that advantage.
Well, I don't think they saw that part coming, but they certainly kept putting... They kept, every time you put out a caution and re-rack the field and all of that mess, there's no telling.
Yeah, it changes.
It changes everything. I mean, you re-rack them and you continuously do that. I mean, you don't know.
You don't know.
Of course, Kyle Larson could be declared illegal tomorrow. That is not out of the question.
Yep.
And encumber that win.
They took the car to the R&D center, so don't give him the trophy yet.
Yeah, and today's just Tuesday.
That's interesting. I mean, he wins the race by whatever default, and his car is impounded as if he may have dominated it or something and needed to be checked out.
He was about the third place car. He would have been in the top five, chances are. But Kyle Larson was not going to win the race.
Boy, ever since he made that comment about selling more souvenirs at the Outlaw race or whatever it was.
Has he been on the blacklist?
He has been on the blacklist.
Well, he ain't said that no more. He has not mentioned.
No, but NASCAR hasn't forgotten it. So you may be absolutely right. They may encumber his win yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to get through tomorrow. Mm-hmm. First of all, so there's been some discussion. Jeff Burton and Dale Jarrett come down pretty hard on NASCAR last week.
Really?
Real hard.
And so that's did Junior. So did Dale Junior.
That's unusual.
Jeff Burton said, "Every short track in America, if the winner's illegal at the end of the race, he's thrown out. That happens and it does.
Yeah."
Nobody, the winner don't like it, but it is what it is. And Jeff Burton went on to say, except here. And they brought up a very interesting point I had not thought about, that in the case of, let's use Darlington for an example, this other 500, Denny Hamlin won, but then the win was determined to be encumbered, so he didn't get the bonus points, et cetera, so he didn't get anything. But as Jeff Burton pointed out, or Dale Jarrett won, nobody got those bonus points.
Right.
They just was lost forever.
Yeah, instead of giving them to the next person in line, as they should have, we just don't want to award them at all.
It was just lost. So, no, that's not the ideal situation. That there's some tweaking to do on that whole line of thinking.
That's a whole lot of tweaking that needs to be done.
So let's get into a discussion we were having before the show aired about Richard Petty's team and sponsorship before we came on the air. Drivers, sponsors.
Was Tim going to talk about
Tim
that?
Knows, he's the Petty man.
Tim was going to talk about that. Take it away, Tim.
Yeah, I've been following it up pretty closely. Richard Petty has let the lease on his shop there in Mooresville go. And that was right on the corner where all the shops are, I think right next to Jack Roush, if I'm not mistaken. I've been up there a couple of times. But it's a huge shop, real nice shop. Of course, I don't think Richard had much more to do with it than having his name on it. But everything just fell apart because he lost Smithfield, he's lost his contract with Ford, and he's lost the lease on that building. The talk was he was going to pair up with Stuart Haas, and now that's not working. So then there was a little bit of talk about maybe with Richard Childress, but I don't think that'll ever work. So I'm wondering if it's time for 80-year-old Richard to say, you know, I'm out of it now. I'll just go and watch or whatever he's going to do. Because they've used him. NASCAR has used him. Sponsors have used him for the last, ever since he retired, actually. And they just use the Petty name to get whatever advantage they can get by using that name. And, you know, Richard's a proud guy, but Richard is also a humble guy. And he's an astute enough businessman that he's going to do whatever it takes to make money to keep Petty Enterprises or RPM Motorsports or whatever the name chooses to be to keep it running. But this time, I don't know if he's going to be able to pull it out or not, because this is looking pretty bleak. And I think, Bopper, you brought up the point, would Kyle Petty take it over? No, I don't think that's going to happen.
No way.
I don't think that would ever happen. You know, he's got a grandson now, Thad Moffitt, that's doing pretty good at ARCA. He just turned 17 years old today, as a matter of fact. And he's doing pretty good in ARCA, and he's doing pretty good in the K&N or late models or whatever the other division he's been running in. So there's a future there for another Petty grandson if they, you know, I don't know what it would take to get the Petty name back. I mean, the garage that Richard runs now at Richard Petty Garage, that could still build race cars. That could still build race cars, but without a major sponsor to put in the updated equipment that they're going to need. I don't know. And I'm shocked, frankly, at Smithfield for pulling out on the Petties. It's just unreasonable to me that they would do that, because I think the very connection with Petty was a good boost for their product. Whether or not they were actually winning races or not, I don't know. Look how many other guys are out there that aren't winning races and have these sponsors. And have you all noticed some of the sponsors on these cars now are companies I have never heard of? Never. I think there was one on one of the big stars had a sponsor on his car at Richland that I have never heard of. Don't know what it is. Got no clue what it is. And I was going to Google it, but I don't know how to spell Google to find that on my computer. So I wasn't able to do that.
Well, kind of like the old days when it was East Tennessee Motors.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I can't
Full House Cocktail Lounge, Daytona Beach.
Yep.
Or Bill Dewey's Auto Wash.
Yeah. Or somebody's funeral.
Yeah, but you know, some of those independent cars had those kind of sponsors on there, like Joe's Pool Hall. I mean, seriously,
Edward
look at the
furniture
on the panels,
Creed
right in front of the rear tire.
Yeah, Rumple Furniture.
Yeah, well, Curtis Kreider ran the Full House Cocktail Lounge for about half a year in 1962.
Yeah. And remember, who was that Cecil Gordon had? Which hotel? Lemon Tree Inn. No. Wasn't that it? Lemon Tree Inn.
Well, one time, in Myrtle Beach. Hoss Ellington Hoss had Ellington. That one time.
The yellow car.
Yeah.
Number 28.
Lemon Tree Inn.
Lemon Tree Inn, Myrtle Beach.
And yeah.
Who drove the native tan Dodge? That was
Frank Warren
for years.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so I tend to agree with you, Tim. This time, the deck is really stacked against Richard.
Yep.
It really is. I mean, he might can pull it out.
It will be a hard return.
But does he want to pull it out?
Yeah, at 80 years old, yeah. Do you want to do all that stuff? Yeah. You know,
because I think Kyle Petty's
the only thing is he has never known anything else. So if he doesn't do that, what will he do?
Well, he can retire.
Well, he will still be around and. I'm sure in some capacity,
yeah, exactly.
As some kind of
he'll just show up
and he can
with
still
his
do commercials and
his hat.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
But there's an element of that story that's sad, though. Isn't
yeah, it is very sad.
Maybe he can apply for an ambulance driver.
Well, he what was it, at Darlington? He had his old car out there on the track.
Oh yeah,
they couldn't get him off the track.
67 Plymouth.
Yeah, it was a good run. It was a long run.
It's a very long run.
I think, well, obviously Richard made it further along the path after retirement than any of his contemporaries did.
Absolutely.
He went longer, or, you know, lasted longer. But that proved to not be the, you know, back in those days, everybody thought I'll just retire and become an owner. That was the, you know, that was the plan of all those guys.
And very few were ever really successful at doing that.
No, but a lot of them tried.
Junior Johnson, maybe.
Yeah, he was.
He
was probably one of the ones that stands out as being a successful car owner.
Yeah.
After a racing career, but there were very few.
Yeah.
Well, look at Richard Childress. He became a very successful car owner.
Absolutely.
Although he was certainly not a successful driver.
Yeah, he had a much more spectacular career as an owner.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than as a driver. Yeah. Remember, even Buddy Baker was a team owner. Remember him? Mm-hmm. The Crisco car. And Cale Yarborough was one.
Jimmy Spencer was for a while.
Bobby Allison was one. Yeah. Bill Elliott was a car owner.
Jimmy Spencer. Boop.
Yeah. All right.
What has become of Jimmy Spencer?
That's a good question.
It's time for a Carolina Race Place historic race finish.
Oh, look. He's
yes,
got a piece
it
of
is.
Paper.
Oh, I got paper now.
Where are we going?
Paper I got. We're going to Columbia Speedway now.
Oh, Tim will like that.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a short one.
Oh.
No ambulance involved.
You know, after doing this for 8 years, you know, I've kind of started dipping down into the file. My original deal was I wanted to have at least 20 finishers, but I've kind of backed up a little bit on that.
Can't find
after any. After 8 years, I mean, think how many shows that's been.
You've run out of
and I'm not,
20
I don't want to repeat anything. All right, here we go. Columbia Speedway. On Thursday night, June 30th, 1966, Columbia Speedway held a regular 40-lap late model sportsman race. At that point in the season, Sam Smith had won four 40-lap races. Bud Moore, Ned Setzer, and Tiny Lund had won one 40-lap race each. Three other special event races were also held at Columbia Speedway in the first half of the season. Ned Setzer won a 200-lap race on June 2nd. Bud Moore won a 100-lap race on May 5th. And Ralph Earnhardt won another 100-lap race on June 23rd. On June 30th, the night started off with two late-model sportsman heat races. Ned Setzer of Claremont, North Carolina, won the first heat race. And Ralph Earnhardt from Kannapolis, North Carolina, won the second heat race. That would put Setzer and Earnhardt on the front row for the feature event later on in the night. A 20-lap cadet or hobby race was won by Johnny Cooper in a 55 Chevy. Cooper was able to hold off Charlie Sox and Sam Sharp to take his seventh victory of the season. When the 40-lap main event late model sportsman race took the green flag, Ned Setzer took the lead from his pole starting position. Setzer had engine problems on lap 8 and was overtaken for the lead by Ralph Earnhardt in a 55 Chevy. Running in the second and third positions were Little Bud Moore and Billy Scott. Moore was challenging Earnhardt for the lead, but on lap 29, his red number 50 Marion Cox Ford pulled into the pits with mechanical problems. At that point in the race, Earnhardt was still setting the pace around the half-mile dirt track. Billy Scott, driving a 57 Chevrolet, made several attempts to get by Earnhardt, but nothing worked. Ralph Earnhardt took the checkered flag on lap 40 before 2,800 fans to win his second race in a row for 1966 at Columbia Speedway. During the race, there were 3 caution flags involving Johnny Smart, Gary Sane, Ed Greer, and James Burnett. The incident involving James Burnett took out 150 feet of the backstretch fence. So anyway, here's the way they finished, what I could find. June 30th, 1966, the 40-lap feature race at Columbia Speedway. The winner, driving the number 8, Ralph Earnhardt, Kannapolis, North Carolina, in a 1955 Chevy, followed by Billy Scott, Union, South Carolina, a 57 Chevy. Fred Ray, Leesville, South Carolina, a 62 Chevy. Larry Wallace, Pineville, North Carolina, a 63 Ford. Ed Greer, Union, South Carolina, a 56 Ford. Gary Sane, Hickory, North Carolina, a 61 Ford. Eldon Yarborough, Jacksonville, Florida, a 57 Chevy. Richard Myers, Batesburg, South Carolina, a 59 Pontiac. Little Bud Moore, Charleston, South Carolina, a 62 Ford. And coming in 10th, Jerry Burnett, New Ellington, South Carolina, in a 55 Chevy. Other than that, I know there were at least three other drivers in the race. Johnny Smart, Hickory, North Carolina, 62 Chevy. James Burnett, Union, South Carolina. Ned Setzer, Claremont, North Carolina, in a 57 Chevy. But that's all the results I had. I'm sure there was probably a total of about 18 or 20 cars altogether, because that was the usual field at Columbia Speedway about that time in 1966. So there it is.
A 59 Pontiac?
A 59 Pontiac. Actually, it was listed as a 59 Pontiac in one place and a 60 Pontiac in the other. So we know it was a Pontiac for sure, but I'm not sure whether it's 59 or 60. Maybe Tim remembers Richard Myers.
In those
you,
days,
you know, I think it was a 1959 Pontiac because I can almost see that car.
Really?
You know, yeah, I love the 59 Pontiacs.
Pontiac.
I bet that was a heavy car.
I bet so.
But you know, Alex is working down there now in Daytona where he can get that kind of information.
Well, we need to lean on Alex if he ever gets power back or whatever.
They might have had hurricane damage.
You know, I'm not sure a lot of that information is even there, to be honest with you.
Well, that's one thing about Alex's job. He will be able to access that kind of stuff.
So if it's there.
If it's there, and if it's not, you'll know immediately that it doesn't exist.
Because we've been on a mission here for the last 8 years to try to document some of this late model sportsman modified and sportsman racing. And We've done a lot of them when you think about 8 years, 52 weeks a year,
that's
or 50
right.
weeks a year, or whatever we do the show. We've done a bunch of them.
This one was you in have. 1966.
Yeah, 66. June 30th, 1966, Bobby. Now, Bud Moore was in the Marion Cox 62 Ford. I did verify that.
I'll tell you, Ralph Earnhardt was a force to be reckoned
yes,
with.
Yes, he was.
In anything. And so was Billy Scott.
Yep. And we've had Billy Scott on the show with us and Bud Moore on the show. So.
Good deal, man.
That's the way it was.
Tim, there, as I'm sure you've noticed, there's been some renewed activity on Facebook about the Columbia Speedway.
There has.
It's just some general discussion.
Which
and
one
a,
now?
A picture of it. You know,
the Columbia Speedway or the new Columbia Speedway?
No, the one that's there now, the modern picture of it, has for some reason risen back to the top. it's kind of an old post, but it's got going again. You know how things will kind of resurface.
Yeah, what it is, somebody posted a picture of Pete Hamilton in that Dodge Challenger kit car.
Probably
Dodge. And then this guy that posted what you're talking about came back and said, well, here's Columbia Speedway in 2014, how it looked like in 2014. And from the looks of it, it wouldn't take much to get it back race ready. So I think I commented maybe a one or two line comment, but I don't really remember.
Yeah, and then they sort of wandered off into Metrolina also, and how that could be gotten ready and all that. And
never happened.
Neither one of them will ever happen.
No,
unfortunately. I mean,
well, Metrolina won't.
If a racetrack around Columbia, South Carolina gets going, it's going to have to be that one in Gadsden. It's going to, because it's out in the middle of nowhere. Although there's houses around it,
there are just too many forces at work against any kind of racetrack revival or new racetrack coming around now. Probably the best thing that all of us old time racers could hope for would be to keep interest up in the racetracks that are functional and open now, to keep them going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't even remember the last one built in South Carolina. Now, Dillon was reopened in, about 5-6 years ago. When was the last one built? I mean, I can't even remember.
Yeah.
Probably.
Stretch it, Bobby.
Probably Florence Timmonsville.
Yeah, that could be. And that's been was probably back in 72, 74,
Well, Lakeview itself was built in the late 70s, about 78 or 9. So it is among the newer ones.
I mean, think about it. That's been, 30, 40 years?
Well, after you leave Myrtle Beach, there is not a racetrack on the coast of South. That's it. That is it on the coast. Now, there's Florence and there's Dillon.
Well, the first one on the coast going north is it Langley or I mean not Langley, Langley.
In Virginia.
In Virginia, or is Carteret on the coast?
Carteret's on the coast.
In Daytona,
going south. It's probably, if you want to call it, Golden Isles is the closest thing to the coast, and that's probably 15 miles inland.
There is one at Savannah. You don't hear much about it, Oglethorpe.
That's true.
For some reason, they're always under the radar, but they still race, and they've been there a long time.
They had Grand National races in the 50s.
I mean, that's a long-term thing, man. You just never hear nothing. But there's Oglethorpe, and there's Golden Isle on the coast of Georgia.
Right.
There's New Smyrna in Florida on the coast, and that's about it.
Yep.
Man, Florida used to be a hotbed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, every little burg had a track.
So did South Carolina, for that matter.
Oh, yeah.
There's probably 3 or 4 tracks around Charleston at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There were probably, at one time back in the 50s, there must have been 40 tracks in South Carolina alone.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sumter is still going. Sumter and Myrtle Beach is actually about the same age.
And Gaffney. Gaffney's
still going. Gaffney is very healthy, by the way. It is.
How about Anderson Speedway?
Anderson's still going.
I thought it was. And Greenville Pickens.
Yep, Greenville Pickens still going.
And there's two more that I can never. There is.
Cherokee.
Well, that's Gaffney.
Oh, okay.
There's a track called Modoc.
Yeah,
and there's one called Traveler's Rest that is still, I mean, Traveler's Rest, that name has an on-again, off-again, long-term history, but it's still going now.
And Lancaster.
And Lancaster, yeah. But that's about it. Yeah. I mean, we've named about all the active tracks.
In what, South Carolina?
In South Carolina. And the only one of them on the coast is Myrtle Beach.
Yep.
The only
which it makes it hard to draw from because you're at a 50% disadvantage from the track inland.
Yeah, because
geography.
There ain't no residents east of it.
And, a lot of sharks, but race.
But no, they don't come to races.
Yeah. All right, who's next?
I was watching the Richland race, but I was also watching on my computer. It was we've all talked a lot about Eldora here in regards to the truck race, but this past weekend was Eldora's signature event of the year, the World 100 for dirt late model cars. That was this weekend, and it started on Thursday, and they raced Thursday, Friday, and then the final 100 lap event on Saturday. Starting the fastest 30 cars, and I think this year they had 105 entries. So it's considered in dirt late model racing, that's the top of the heap. That's the most prestigious, significant race that you can run in and win. So, you know, it goes without saying that all the top dirt racers in America were at Eldora this week. And the thing that made it very interesting is you have to go back to 2015, 2 years ago. There was a late model team based out of North Carolina, out of Greensboro, a very old team, the Leroy Rumley, him and his son Kevin Rumley. The Rumleys have been in racing as long as there's been racing. Various drivers over the years and everything, but in 2015 they teamed up with a driver from Georgia named Jonathan Davenport and just went on a tear on the dirt late model world. In 2015 they won everything there was to win and won like $700,000, which is pretty significant racing dirt tracks, and just had a incredible banner year in 2015, won the Lucas Oil Championship, won everything you could win. But their success tended to just burn everybody out for various reasons. The team, they went through 2016 together, but there was just something, they just was nowhere. They still had a pretty good year in 2016, but it was nothing like the previous year, which is, you know, it's tough to duplicate those mountaintop years where you just are unstoppable. And so at the end of 2016, the Rumleys and Jonathan Davenport and everything, they just all parted company and went their different ways, and the Rumleys basically shut down. They just, I think they were about raced out, and Mr. Leroy Rumley's 80 some years old. He's the engine man. He built the team's motors. And his son, Kevin, is considered the mad scientist of dirt track racing. He is just super engineered, got everybody buffaloed, and the Lucas Oil people was changing rules over supposedly this apparatus that Kevin Rumley made, which nobody even knows if it's true or not. The theory was Kevin Rumley had designed some kind of apparatus that he mounted to the left rear suspension of his car, and it's just known as the Rumley device. And nobody knows for sure. It's a major psych job. And Kevin Rumley is just a master on Twitter at trolling. I mean, he says just enough to drive people nuts. And so the Lucas Oil Series made all kind of rules preventing what they thought was the Rumley device, which was never conclusively proven or disproven. But the team just disbanded. They just, for 2017, they just didn't do nothing. Jonathan Davenport got hooked up in the meantime with Barry Wright from Cowpens, South Carolina. He's a dirt late model chassis guy, been in it a long time. And Jonathan Davenport was going to drive the Barry Wright house car for this year. And Kevin Rumley and his dad was going to do nothing. They just went silent, just went dark. Well, the year started, and Jonathan Davenport and Barry Wright could not fall out of a tree. They could not do anything. I mean, could do nothing. They had zero success as a team. And both of these are very experienced. Barry Wright's been building cars forever. Jonathan Davenport is a known driver. But the combination just produced nothing. So they struggled up to August. And Jonathan just left the team. He just left. the Barry Wright organization. For he left to go nowhere. He didn't have anything to do, but he wasn't going to keep doing that. So anyway, with all of those developments, there's another North Carolina racer whose name is G.R. Smith. He's a transplanted New Jersey. He's raced at, he's kind of a local guy. He's raced at Dublin and Fayetteville a lot. He's a wild driver. He holds the track record at Dublin right now. G.R. Smith does. And he, this has just happened just about a month ago. He offered to let Jonathan Davenport drive his car. He's got one car, one motor, one everything. And so this team goes to two races up in Ohio, and they win both of them. Well, all the critics said, well, you weren't running against nobody. So weekend before last, they went to the Hillbilly 100, which is a big dirt race up in West Virginia. And the Davenport G.R. Smith team won that. They won the Hillbilly, which is that's getting to be a pretty big. So now the next thing on the circuit is the World 100 in Eldora. And Kevin Rumley put on Twitter about last week, he said, the band is back together. That's all he put. And people went ballistic. And so for the World 100, Kevin Rumley and Jonathan Davenport and Mr. Leroy Rumley and their other crew members all converged at Eldora to help Jonathan and GR in this one-off deal. And anyway, they got one car and one motor, and they set fast time for the whole weekend. He started on in third place on Saturday night in the big race, and Jonathan was leading. By the time the cars got to the first turn, he was already in the lead. He led all 100 laps. I mean, it was a K. I watched it on.
Did he have one of them special devices?
Yeah, the guy's name, the Rumley device, is Kevin Rumley himself. And everybody just knew that the Davenport, they was going to run around the top on the cushion because that's kind of their hallmark, running on the top. And he run just as low on the bottom as you could get. The car, you couldn't even see the car in the turns. He was so low. And everybody else thinking he was going to run on the top was all up there running. And you know Eldora, if you keep doing that, you eventually get in the wall. Remember that in all them truck races?
Yep.
How eventually you just start pounding the wall, and all of his competitors did that. And he's just flying on the bottom. I mean, he's not even pushing the car. Leads flag to flag. That's the first time that's been done since 2003.
Was this win encumbered?
It was. And along the way, they announced on the video that this World 100 crowd was the biggest that has ever been at Eldora Speedway. The wow. biggest crowd. It's bigger than the NASCAR trucks. It's bigger than the King's Royal. They had more people at Eldora than the Stanley Cup Finals. And the NBA final.
Where's that race at?
It was the biggest crowd in the history of Eldora, which is used to having some big crowds. And I think a lot of that was due to the fact that everybody knew the band was back together and just came to see what was going to happen. Yeah, it was a great story.
That happens when you get some excitement in racing. Yeah, and some
exactly.
hype. And NASCAR has just missed the boat completely on that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, look at the Allison Yarborough fight. Yeah. What was it, in 79?
Yes.
Yeah, 79 or 78.
79.
How much interest in NASCAR did that? It's incalculable. Nobody can figure how much interest that drew or made in the NASCAR races.
Bobby can tell you what his royalty check should be.
Well, Bobby Allison, I heard him make the statement that he told Big Bill France that he ought to pay him royalties for all of the free advertising that they got out of that incident. And of course, Big Bill didn't see it that way, but but the,
of course not.
The interest that generated was just astronomical.
So Tim,
sir,
what you got, buddy?
Well, I think I've done most of my talking, but I will let you know that I just heard from Alex via text, and he says, in case you're wondering, I have no power, with an estimate of the 18th for power returning. So
Wow. That's
his problem down there. He's got no power in Florida, so
6 days.
We'll have to do with it. But what I had was what we were talking about earlier, when we were talking about Danica Patrick is out now, Matt Kenseth is out now. Who else is out? I can't even remember. There's so many of them, and there's so much going on in
Almirola.
Social. Now, Almirola. But there's so much going on.
I was doing something else when you said Danica was out. Apparently, I missed that.
Yeah, Danica's out.
It was announced today she's out at Stuart Haas. And there's probably, from what she says, she won't be back.
Probably.
But she says she wants to, but she has no hope. And Kenseth has no ride. You know, and I don't know. It's just they've got a whole new group coming in now, and I think
it will work cheaper.
Oh yeah,
they'll work cheaper, and that's going to be a good thing. But that William Byron,
yep,
I think he's going to be good. Of course, we've already seen Kyle Larson good. I'm waiting for Chase Elliott to hit his stride, when he's going to be good. Ryan Blaney has shown flashes of brilliance over and over and over. I like Trevor Bayne just because of the guy he is, you know. And I think another guy that is so underrated is, Dave Blaney is one of them, but I got to think my old mind is worn out now. David Reagan, because he was doing good, then he got out of the Roush ride, and I don't even know who he's driving for now, but it's certainly not top-notch equipment. But I think David Reagan is a top-notch driver, and I think he's had great equipment. He'd go out there and show that. But of the cars, as I was watching, and you were, well, you didn't get to see the race, but Bobby, you did. Did it not seem to you that out of that 39-car field, I think they had, maybe they had 40, 39, there were at least 15 cars that went back to the old days of no major sponsors, no big bucks, no anything. They were just out there to run. Didn't it seem like that to you, or was I just seeing things?
Yeah, and I think that was the case of Derek Cope, for example. That was a throwback to the old independent days where you're just out there trying to make laps.
And he has left that team, too. I saw that.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, there used to be probably two-thirds of the field back in the day was sort of in that.
Weekly sponsors?
Yeah.
Go to town, get a sponsor, race that night, and change the sponsor for the next race.
Yep. That's why the sign painters that travel with NASCAR stayed busy changing sponsors and numbers on the cars.
Yeah.
And some of those are live on and forever, like Boomershine Pontiac on the Jack Smith Buck Baker car in 1960. Boomershine.
Yeah. Tim, what do you know about this same engine for two races deal?
Probably the same thing you did, because I read it on NBC, SN, NASCAR, and they were talking about there's going to be a rule next year that it's going to be two engines. You got to use the engine in two races. And the way that I read it, that's got to be two consecutive races, although it did not say that. I've got to call my friend the ambulance driver and clarify that, but it did not say that it had to be two consecutive races, but it sure led you down that path that that's what they wanted you to believe.
So I
don't know. They've got so many rule changes in the book. I love NASCAR's little incursion into social media today when they said, we have a lot of problems from Saturday night we need to address. Really?
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand what those problems may be. But it's the same thing. They put themselves in these binds because they're trying to always come up with something new to try to attract
the races.
Well, they are that true. That is true. But it was like being at Darlington and seeing all the people sitting around me of all age groups and everything else. most all of them were there interested in the race. The young guys, the old guys, the ladies, everybody was there to watch the race, and they were interested in the race, and they had a favorite. We had a autistic boy about 13 years old that was sitting on the same row I was, a couple of seats over, and he was a absolute Joey Logano fan, you better believe it. And he would stand up. His mother would have to hold him around the race every time Logano would come off of turn four, and he would just go back and forth with his fist in the air for Logano, you know. So they had every kind of person possible there, and they were enjoying the races for what it was. And I don't think we need Monster Energy to bring in their deafening, what they call music, which certainly is not pre-race shows. But anyway, I think NASCAR can get back on track, but I don't think they're going to do it with the current leadership they've got. They're going to have to do something. Now, that Brent DeWar, he was the new president of NASCAR. I saw him for the first time at Richmond in Victory Lane, crowning the regular season champion. He's not a Mike Helton impressive type guy by any means.
You mean, are you saying that negatively or positively?
No, I'm just saying, you know, how Mike Helton walks in a room and he's got command of the room.
Right.
But one thing because of his physical stature, and another thing because of the way he talks, and Brent DeWar, I'm not saying it negatively. I'm just saying he looks like a humble little guy that should be behind the bank window cranking out all the figures to make sure all the books balance, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like in It's a Wonderful Life, that little bank examiner.
Yeah, doesn't have the physical stature that you would expect.
No, but you don't know what kind of power he's been given. I just don't know. I don't know what is going through, because they don't seem to have a handle on being able to address the issues that are pulling them down, you know. And now they've got all this fiasco. You know, next year Richmond will be the first race of the chase, or the playoff, or whatever, because the last qualifying race is going to be Indy, and then they're going to Richmond for the first race of the playoff. So it's going to be a whole different ball game when they get there then, because they won't be any of this. Well, it seemed, go all the way back to the itchy elbow and the spin out, and I'm putting Jeff Gordon in because I can, and all those. Just go back, what's the last 5 or 6 years there's been controversy over that race at every turn, every way possible. And Saturday night's race was one of those things that, you know, you had to see it to believe it. You know, and if I had had a bottle of wine or something, I probably still wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, and without question, external forces shaped the ending, the way the race played out.
Absolutely.
Not the race itself, but the factors controlling the race controlled the finish. That is undeniable, that all those things changed how it would have played out. The ambulance,
right,
and all those cautions.
They had more excuses for why that caution flag was thrown for Derek Cope than when my little grandson was 3 years old and used to break things. He would always tell me, it was an accident, Pop. Well, NASCAR was having
this persistence to try to create a Game 7 moment in every race is driving that bus to a large extent, that we've got to have this dramatic, over-the-top conclusion to every, even if we have to help it along. And I think
be over the cliff.
Yeah, that is that is just flawed thinking right there. I mean, everything is not going to be a Game 7 moment. It just ain't. And to try to make one is worse.
It makes
than
it even worse.
Desperation.
Yeah.
All right.
And
folks,
where are they going this week? Chicagoland, I think.
Yeah.
That was for the first race of the chase, which that track to me is on the same scale as Loudon. I don't like it. I wouldn't go to a race there if they put me in the suites.
Yeah.
You know, just like Loudon, I wouldn't. But
all right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. thanks to every one of you for helping put this thing together. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to all you folks for tuning in and listening to us. We don't know why you do.
As always, we'd like to say thank you for doing what
you do. Each and every one of you, good night. God bless.
Racist.